Council, good morning to you. This is the case of Bowling versus Bowling. And we will begin by introducing members of the court. I'm Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice. And by service, by seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will now introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Jeff Funk, good morning.
Jonathan Papik, good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
And counsel, Mr. Liguori, are you present this morning?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. And Mr. Smith, are you present?
Yes, Your Honor, good morning.
Yes. So just checking on the logistics here, is one of you calling in?
I'm calling in, Your Honor.
Very good. Is that Mr. Liguori?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's permissible. We just didn't know who we had on the screen there. That is fine. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor. I'd just like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal, if I may, please.
You may do that, Mr. Liguori, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for having us back here before this court again. We're here today. I'm representing Robert Bowling, the son of the testator in this will contest. His sister is the appellee in this matter. What we're here on is we're really just asking this court to allow us to follow the actual terms of the will in probate. And essentially here, we have a two paragraph will, a first and second paragraph. The second paragraph transferred balance, residue, and remainder to the to Kimberly Bowling, the appellee. And what it specifically shows is that there was an intent to have a balance, residue, and remainder. And here, what appellee has argued on a motion for summary judgment is that they are entitled to everything, but that's not what the testator's intentions are or were. And the testator specifically states that within his will by stating specifically that he intended to have a balance, residue, and remainder that would go to Kimberly Bowling.
What do you contend that the testator intended to leave to your client?
My client, the testator's a collector of guns and collector of antiques, has a lot of shop work tools and some farm equipment. My client was intended to get those guns. He has the testator's two grandkids. The testator specifically told him he wanted him to keep those guns for the grandkids. A lot of those shop tools were supposed to go to the grandkids. They were supposed to be there for them. This is what the family did, the testator and my client. They went hunting. They worked in the shop together. He was very close to his two grandchildren, both sons of mine.
That there's no specific device in the will that supports any of the things you're telling us. Any of the things about the guns or the antiques, there is no specific device. How do we get past that?
There's no specific device. There's no device specifically whatsoever. What there is language in the will that says specifically that the testator intended that there be a balance, residue, and remainder. Otherwise, the testator simply puts everything goes to Kimberly Bowling. And that's what's most concerning to me in this will, is if everything was intended to go to Kimberly Bowling, that's what the will would say. That's what we would see. When my client came to me.
When there's only one device in the will and it's a general device, how can we construe it the way you're asking us to?
It's not a general device. It's a device of the balance, residue, and remainder, which shows very specifically the testator's intent that there be something left over. Balance is essentially the leftovers. Remainder is the leftovers. Residue, I only hear about residue on commercials for soap scum. So it's the minute amount that's left over. And it's kind of a slap in the face to my client that they're coming in here and saying, hey, this is intended to transfer everything, when the specific language of the will says absolutely it's not intended to transfer everything.
Well, Mr. Liguori,
how does the rule of construction that's set forth in section 30-2342 apply to this case?
Yes, Your Honor. This is the statute that Apelli attempts to rely on, and what it specifically says is a general residue clause of a will. And then we say, what is a general residue of a clause of will? It says a disposition of all the property of the testator, and that doesn't apply here. We don't have a disposition of all the property of the testator. In this will, if the intent was to transfer all his property, we would have a provision. Wills always have provisions where the testator specifically states, I intend to transfer all my property through this will.
Mr. Liguori, doesn't that statute say a general residuary clause in a will, or, and emphasize the word or, a will making general disposition of all of the property? So a general residuary clause in a will, under the normal construction of the English language, would be construed to pass all property which the testator owns at death. How does that not apply to the will that's in front of us when there is no specific device in the will?
You have to look at the testator's intent. And how does the testator have any idea whatsoever that that's going to be interpreted that way? He has none. He doesn't believe it's going to be interpreted that way. And if he intended to transfer the entire estate, all he has to say is, I intend to transfer the entire estate. If that's what he intended to do, that's what we would see. That's exactly
Mr. Liguori,
be in that will.
What do you make of the language that says, I am not unmindful of my son, Robert Bowling, but it is my will that he receive nothing hereunder?
Yes, Your Honor, that specific language, and that's where the trial court was specifically saying that he couldn't get around either. And when he looked at that language, he took that language as an independent provision. And that language is not independent. If the testator's intent was to disinherit his son, he would state so specifically, I disinherit my son, he receives nothing in this will. Under the affidavit of my client, which is exhibit number 8, is attached a will specifically that says that he receives nothing within this will. In the trial court's determination, he says that the testator stated he receives nothing in the will. In fact, the provision is just the second sentence of the rest, residue, and remainder provision that transfers, and just says that Robert Bowling received nothing here under that provision. So if you read it in context with the provision, which that's what it is, it's the second sentence of that provision, it just simply says that Robert Bowling doesn't take any of the remainder or the leftovers of this will. It shows that there was a prior intent to have disbursement to my client. And their argument is that, well, the intent was to disinherit your client. That seems unreal, unlikely. I mean, it just seems outrageous considering the first provision says that he can serve as PR without bond. And I think that anybody in will construction is going to agree that you're not going to have somebody you disinherit serving as PR without bond in your will. So, and the testator was perfectly okay with that. The testator was perfectly okay with that because the testator's intent was that there was supposed to be specific divisions to the two children. That was supposed to be happen. They knew that was to happen. This is essentially a leftovers will. And in all these wills, you would see a provision that says specifically that the testator intends to transfer all of his assets. That's not in this will. There's a reason that's not in this will, because that's not what the testator intended to do. If it was, it would be in the will. It'd be clear and present. That would have been done. What is in this will is that the testator intended a balance residue to go to Kimberly Bowling, that essentially the leftovers to clean up the estate, that's going to Kimberly Bowling. That resolves any issues, anything that would come up. It's just a cleanup provision. It was never intended by the testator to say, Kimberly Bowling gets everything.
Mr. Liguori, if we were to side with you, would our opinion read that your client got the guns, or would we send it back to the trial court, or how would we do this?
Yes, I believe it's send it back to the trial court, and that's really ultimately up to you, but I believe it would send back to the trial court and show specifically that there was no transfer of everything to Kimberly Bowling, that, and we're here on a motion for summary judgment. But I mean, clearly his intent was only to transfer the leftovers, and that's what we asked this court to consider. Otherwise, we would not have a need to have that term in there. That second provision would simply say, I transfer everything to Kimberly Bowling. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that at all. And that's what I'm asking the court to consider, is he has that term in there for a specific purpose. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Mr. Smith, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. The appellant's argument that this will somehow has something missing ignores the face of the will. This will has numbered paragraphs. They're sequential. First paragraph is labeled first. It designates a personal representative. The next paragraph is labeled second, and that's the residuary clause. If there were something missing, these numbers would be out of order. As to the contention that Willis Bowling must have had some other intention in mind when he left everything to Kimberly Bowling under this residuary clause, I would contend that a party creating a will who intended to leave everything of every class and every category of property to one person would do that exactly in a residuary clause. Under 302342, that residuary clause has the effect of leaving everything to Kimberly Bowling. To include a sentence at the end of that residuary clause out of an abundance of caution that unequivocally disinherits his son, Robert Bowling, further makes Willis Bowling's intent clear. The question before the district court on a will contest really is merely whether the decedent died leaving a valid will. It's impossible for the district court to do that without, to some extent, construing that will. The district court had to decide whether or not this instrument was a will. And insofar as it had to make that determination, it had to determine whether the terms of this will manifested a gift of property. It found that it did, but really the main question on this motion for summary judgment was whether Willis Bowling left a valid will. And those questions are questions of due execution capacity, lack of undue influence, none of which are presented with any sort of material fact in the appellant's evidence to the trial court. There is no valid evidence that Willis Bowling lacked the capacity to make this will, or that he was somehow influenced to make this will unduly by anyone. Robert Bowling is merely unhappy that his father wrote him out of his will, and he's trying to contest the will. I believe that the technical construction of the will and whether or not this residuary clause leaves everything to Kimberly and whether or not Robert is unequivocally disinherited is a question for the county court, and the district court really only needs to decide whether this will is valid and then send it back to the county court for the remainder of the probate. The appellant's contention that somehow the residuary clause is leftovers only, I think, misconstrues Nebraska law. I think that under Nebraska statutes, the residuary clause should be thought of not as leftovers, but rather as a catch-all. Under 302342, it says everything of every nature whenever acquired. I fail to see a category of assets or even a particular item that could possibly fall outside of that in Robert Bowling's will. For those reasons, the appellee's asking this court to affirm the decision of the district court granting summary judgment to the appellee and determining that Willis Bowling died leaving a valid will.
Mr. Smith, I want to explore something you said a moment ago because I want to be sure I understand it. You've asked for affirmance of the district court's decision on summary judgment, but a portion of that court's decision was not just that the will was valid, but also ruling on the dispute with respect to whether the will was ambiguous. Is it your position that the district court lacked jurisdiction over the ambiguity or not?
I think that to some extent the district court had to rule on the ambiguity, at least insofar as it had to determine whether or not this was a valid will. I think that technically the county court should make the ultimate determination of will construction. But I think that until the district court kicks it back down to county court on summary judgment, the county court can't make that decision. So yes, I think that the district court was correct in granting summary judgment and finding that Willis Bowling left a valid will. I think that constructing that will may have been error, but I think that at least insofar as the district court determined that the will is valid, the district court should be affirmed.
And to be clear, this is nothing that you raised to the district court. Is that correct? You didn't discourage the district court from passing on the question of ambiguity. In fact, you argued that issue to the district court.
That's correct.
Are you asking this court to affirm the district court's decision as modified?
Well, that depends on whether I'm correct about which court has jurisdiction to construe the will. If I'm mistaken, then the district court can be affirmed in whole. If not, then I think it would need to be affirmed as modified, and then the county court would have to construe the will.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith, let me ask you a question about ambiguity. I'm not sure which court ultimately answers this, but Mr. Liguori pointed out that his client was possibly could have been a personal representative in this case, and that it doesn't make sense to say somebody could be a personal representative and not required to have any bond and at the same time disinherit them. How do you respond to that?
Well, Your Honor, there's no requirement that a personal representative has to have any interest in the outcome of the distribution of the will or any property interest in the estate in order to serve, including to serve without bond. Ms. Bowling, Kimberly Bowling, has no children, so were she unable or would she have predeceased Willis Bowling, his only remaining living family would have been Robert Bowling and Robert's family. I don't believe that it's ambiguous. I don't believe that it creates a problem that Robert was listed as a successor personal representative, because in the only instance in which he would have served Kimberly would have not been there to take anything anyway, and it would have passed through her estate.
Mr. Smith, I'd like to return to the colloquy that you had with Justice Stacy and your discussion about the extent of the authority of the district court in this type of transferred proceeding. You are relying upon the language of section 30-2429.01 sub 1, which talks about transferring the proceeding to determine whether the decedent left a valid will. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so to the extent that an interpretation of the will may be subsumed within the determination whether or not a will is valid, you're not contesting that a district court can't look at that, but you are saying the extent of the district court's authority is determining whether the decedent left a valid will.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't think the district court can make the determination about whether it's a valid will without looking at the terms of the will itself to see whether they make a distribution of property.
Thank you.
I'll use the rest of my time.
Okay, if you have some things up, Mr. Smith, thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, counsel. So thank you both very much for participating by WebEx. And the court will go on to the next case, and you, counsel, are excused.